Blog Talk Radio.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين. الرحمن الرحيم. مالك يوم الدين. إياك نعبد وإياك نستعين. اهدنا الصراط المستقيم. صراط الذين أنعمت عليهم غير المغضوب عليهم ولا الضالين.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Latifa A. Hamid, the CEO for American Muslim 360, the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice is protected.
The views expressed by the host guests are their own and not necessarily the position of AM 360 or the parent corporation, the Community-Wide Shura Conference, CWSC Incorporated. AM 360 content is intended as a community service and is not designed to provide specific personal, medical, financial, or legal counsel or other professional advice, and no liability shall extend to the host or hostesses of AM 360 or CWSC. We encourage you to seek an advisor for your specific circumstance. Now Joshua fought the battle of Jericho,
and the walls came tumbling down. Community-Wide Shura Conference and American Muslim 360 invite you to promote your organization or event on the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice protected. Affordable rates allow you to promote your event, product, or service and strengthen our national intelligentsia network. Contact corporate underwriting today at info@cwsc.us. That's info@cwsc.us. Or call 910-317-0297. Again, 910-317-0297. Together we can remake the world.
Assalamu alaikum. God, Monday morning. It is a beautiful Monday morning. We made it. We made it. I think Brother Fleming got some background now. Brother Fleming.
Yes, assalamu alaikum.
Can
you hear me?
All right. We can. We can hear you and everybody else with you.
Everybody. got the whole train crew here. We haven't got no board
whole
yet.
Entourage.
I see you here a little bit anymore. Whole entourage on the Amtrak here. But I'm going to cut it off in a little bit. I just want to be on the beginning. And once I get on the train, I'll find me hopefully a quiet car to get back on the station with you.
Okay. We'll check in with you real quick. Get you to check in with us. Let us know how you're doing on this Election Monday.
Super Tuesday. Yes, we were down in Raleigh. That's where I was at yesterday with Dr. Barber. We had 34 different states doing the same thing, delivering about 4 specific demands to the state legislators, and also pushing the concept of registering 10 million people between now and November across the country. Very exciting. We had 5,000 people right here in North Carolina at the rally. Very well attended, interfaith, intergenerational, all of the above. So 111 was able to participate in that. And they had me serve in some capacity as well. Then I was so excited to see my sister, Vice President Kamala Harris, openly declared there should be a ceasefire. And oh, my God, it lifted my soul. I just hope there's a follow-through on that. But her reference to being a humanitarian effort at the very minimum, and it, such an inhumane treatment they're doing to them, they have to drop lunches out of the sky to feed desperate people. Anyway, that bothered my soul just to see that taking place like that. So those who have lifted my soul, inshallah, will go forward as we approach Ramadan with even more blessings as we move humanity forward. And in 24, let's do more, listen more, learn more, and love each other more. That's my introduction for this day.
Thank you, sir. I want to talk about that. I'm glad you mentioned her because I want to ask you guys about what she said. So,
okay,
sister, I know you want to dive right into it, but I'm gonna ask you to just hold your tongue on what she said because I have a very specific question about her speech that I want to ask both of you. So when you do your check-in. Just hold that one to the side because I have a very specific question about what she said that I want to ask both of you. So tell us.
All right.
Tell us what's got your hijab shifting and your wig shifting and what has your heart warming. Talk to us on this election Monday before this Super Tuesday.
Okay. All right. That sounds good. First of all, assalamu alaikum to you and our audience,
we got
to
fun.
You,
yes,
listeners who have dialed in. I was happy to see the courage of the Russian people out for the funeral for Navalny. I think that was encouraging to see people who know they could definitely risk imprisonment to stand up to a leader that they have no faith in, for a leader that they had a lot of faith in, who was willing to sacrifice his life. And I don't know which one was greater, but I also was very, very happy with the outcome of the uncommitted voters in Michigan that accomplished 10 times their goal of 10,000 voters. They actually got 100,000 uncommitted voters. And I think that we see the result of that in the shifting that President Biden has taken, at least public shifting. We don't know what he's saying in private to his cohorts in Israel, but I saw the uncommitted vote as a positive strategy. And what has me very, very disturbed was related to what Brother Fleming was saying with the humanitarian, the need for humanitarian drops into Gaza was the cold-blooded IDF shooting of hungry people rushing to get supplies, and the callous lies of their representatives who, they're so shameless. They get on television before the world and tell us, no, it wasn't what you saw. It was what we say it is. So I'm not going to go more into that. I think anyone who's seen the videos know what I'm talking about. That's it. But I am anxiously awaiting Ramadan.
Alhamdulillah. Yeah, I think we're all checking this morning. I will tell you that watching the food drop from the helicopters after the killing, I'm gonna call it what it is a murder of people trying to get food. Before the shot on the crowd, I had just watched a short documentary on, let me see if Brother Melissa, Brother Fleming, let me see if it's any quieter. But I was watching a documentary and it was showing the children of Gaza in hospitals, and they were showing them starving. They were showing families just how far families had to travel to get food. And then there was like this breaking news of the Israeli soldiers shooting on the caravan. And of course, as you mentioned, we get the propaganda that they were rushing the trucks, whereas the videos were showing something different. And of course, the propaganda was, don't believe your lying eyes. Believe what we're telling you. Your eyes are lying to you. But I got a little bit of trauma because it took me back to what was happening in the island after the hurricane a few years ago. When 45 went and he was throwing, you remember when he was throwing paper towels in Puerto Rico?
Yep. Yeah.
Yes.
Seeing that food drop from the plane, this is what it reminded me of. It is such a inhumane thing that we can't even give people food. We got to drop things. Whereas even in places like the Ukraine and Europe and in places where we're facing famine, and the UN, they said they're facing famine. We make every single effort. We put soldiers with extra gear on to go in and personally hand food to families to make sure that it gets into the hands of the people who are starving. In this case, we're going to drop it from the sky, and every man for himself, every woman, child, you're going to have to figure out how to get it, which is why they got shot on in the first place, because they had to figure out how to get it to the food. So you're going to compile inhumanity over inhumanity over inhumanity. So anybody who thought that this was a good idea, and I get it, that the United States thinks that they're helping by dropping food and supplies from the sky, I take a different approach. I still think it's inhumane. Because now you are starving, you are thirsty, you are dying, you have no energy because you have no food and no water. You have no rest, no respite. You don't know where there are bombs, you don't know where people are shooting, but now you need to travel to get to the food that they just dropped from the sky. How are you supposed to survive? And you must leave your children to go get it because your children are weak and they cannot travel. How is this humanitarian aid? So I'm conflicted if I'm to think that this is good. Because, yes, you made this effort. Yes, your intention may have been to provide aid, but it is the least amount of effort necessary to say that we did something. Your thoughts? I wanted your thoughts on that first before I ask you about
it. It's the most inefficient method. And it is a photo app. And hopefully it will lead to one other aspect of this situation that has been mentioned is that the IDF has been killing the police force in Gaza. So therefore, when the aid comes, you don't have the security necessary to make sure that the distribution can be set up in a humane effort. So I think that the drop is the first drop, is the first step that has to make the Israelis look so bad that they have to open up other border crossings so that they can get in, have more than just the two that we currently have. And then also that they, CNN did a thing showing, did a report showing the warehouses that are backed up with humanitarian aid because of the application that the IDF does at those border crossings when they examine the trucks, considering something like baby wipes or scaffolds that are in medical packets as something that's too dangerous or, you know, other things that would be normal medical supplies. So hopefully, God willing, inshallah, that terrible incident and the drop and the airdrop combined will put enough pressure on Israel and Egypt also to have more openings at the border crossing where the trucks can go through and get in and be secure. Even if we have to have UN troops to secure the trucks going in, do that also. And don't, you know, veto it at the UN Security Council meeting if a resolution like that comes up. Okay, go ahead, Brother Fleming.
Yeah, I'm going to try to speak above this noise in the train. Can you hear me okay?
We can hear you and your fellow travelers, too.
And well, two things real quickly, because I know there's a lot of noise in the background. You know, when I saw the food being dropped into the water, some of it fell into the oceans along the beaches there, and the children were so desperate, they were running into the water trying to secure food. So to me, it was a heartache on many, many levels. You know, my resolve is that there should be something like a Marshall Plan in Gaza from those very rich Arab nations to make sure that place is rebuilt so people can live there, food is provided. There should be more pressure from OPEC to pressure that situation. And that would involve all the Western nations, including the United States. If you don't do right by these people in Gaza, we're going to cut off the oil to you. And that would be more of a direct impact on what they're doing or not doing. Anything else less than that is just an addition to the heartache that people are suffering. I mean, can you imagine sending your child out to get a box of food in the water just to sustain yourself for a meal? No long-term solution. And I know the Israeli government on those borders are blocking all those trucks that have been there for months now trying to bring in goods. And then when they come in, you saw what happened over the weekend. There's such desperation that people are rushing those vehicles just to get food, you know, a fundamental human right, having something to eat. So I'm disturbed quite a bit by that. I was set up for nothing less than a Marshall-type plan that was done during World War II that went into all of the previously occupied parts of, you know, Europe at one point, East Europe for the most part, to provide greater aid for the people, of course, that are suffering in the Gaza Strip right now. And the money and resources are there. So I'm not going to accept that there's not resources available to do that. And I'll stop there because I know there's some, you know, a lot of noise in the background, but there's a lot more I can say about that. That's the very minimum, inshallah, going forward. But we need to put more pressure on some of our OPEC members, too, to do more in that area. And don't let them cow down to the wishes of the Israeli government, inshallah. All right, that's what I'm like.
Well, I will tell you this, that I think that that's true, brother. But let's be clear, though. That is a war crime. While I think that the Arab nations and the UN nations, including the United States, should have a moral imperative to assist, that is on Israel. That is part of the that is a war crime, what they are committing. While all of the rest of that is true, and all of the rest of that, and two things can be true at the same time. What they are doing right now is part of the international standards. Is they are supposed to be ensuring that the innocents are not harmed. And that is not what they are doing.
The Geneva Peace Accords were violated several times. The Geneva Peace Accords that are supposed to govern even warfare have been violated over and over again by the Israeli government. So there's no question it's on the verge of committing genocide against the people who can't defend themselves. And you can look at any international convention, any resolution passed by them, and they simply ignore it. Even the International Court of Justice, you know, put them to task in terms of questioning them, and they know that there's no arm behind the International Court of Justice, so they sort of thumb their fingers up to them. But they do have the influence of international opinion, and that, I think, will begin to make a difference, inshallah, going forward. And again, I apologize for the train noise, so I'm not going to say a whole lot. I just learned from my sisters. And our listening audience, inshallah. All right, assalamualaikum.
Walaikum assalam. Well, what you're talking about, Sylvia, comes after the current situation and several Muslim countries have already committed to do that, and they have been putting pressure on Israel and the negotiators that they have to, first of all, get the ceasefire in place and get some peace established, get the ceasefire in place. If you want to do a temporary one, it has to be something that's leading to a permanent ceasefire. And also, which would be a complete cessation of all fighting. And once that is accomplished, then we talk about rebuilding and what portion of the rebuilding that Israel has to take responsibility for. But I think the critical thing now for people to realize is that We have another week or so before the start of Ramadan, and one member of the Israeli war cabinet, Ben Gvir, who is a convicted terrorist. Now, he is a terrorist in the current Israeli government. He was found by the previous Israeli government as being a terrorist, but now he is an official of the government. That's one thing. He has a history of the last 2 to 3 years of, and he was given the responsibility over the Temple Mount area, which is where the Masjid Al-Aqsa is. And during Ramadan, he has that documented history of taking armed guards into the masjid during Ramadan and attacking the believers there in the masjid. Now, there's been some reporting that has taken that responsibility for him this year so far. We don't know how long that's going to last. But the other war cabinet member, has put out the imperative that unless there is a ceasefire by the beginning of Ramadan, so we're talking about in the next 8 or 9 days, that the Israeli plan for the ground incursion into Rafah will take place. So there's some very critical things that are on the table right now. And President Biden, from my perspective, he has to really show up and not just this lip service, not just send a proxy out there and the vice president to issue a policy statement. Vice President Harris, I believe, will be hosting not God, but one of the I'm bringing his name now, one of the officials, the War Cabinet officials in D.C. If not today, tomorrow, here in the States. He'll be here in the States. So it's going to be very critical this next week in seeing what's going on. In the meantime, we have Super Tuesday coming up tomorrow, and I think it's going to be very important to see. There has been talk of other states using the strategy of uncommitted in the primary vote. So it'll be interesting to see if that happens and if there are significant numbers, what is the next chess move that President Biden is going to make. So he wants to get elected. He wants to get elected. And I think Michigan showed him that he's not going to be electable with his current foreign policy, specifically his support of the genocide that's taking place in Israel, that Israel is perpetrating against Gaza. And we have to remember, according to international law and the Genocide Convention that America has signed on to, the policies of his administration make our country complicit in genocide. So what's the repercussion behind that? That's it. I'm finished.
Brother Fleming?
Yeah, I just concur 100% with my sister. I got into a very serious discussion on Saturday, in fact, with a group of faith leaders in Raleigh, talking about what kind of united front we can present to support the Palestinians in this attempt to genocide the whole community. And most of them took the same position of a violation of Geneva Peace Accords, been done over and over again. What would be the repercussion for this kind of violation? And keep it current and keep it among the people of faith to really have an independent voice without preference to any one party or the other party, but an independent analysis and independent voice of really a cry of just inhumanity to humanity coming out of that small country with so much influence around the world. And I think the light on that will make a difference, inshallah, going forward. It's become a specific moral issue. You can't get around that. And an immoral act of one government against innocent people who really cannot defend themselves. So what you're really demonstrating is your disregard for humanity, your disregard for anyone trying to attempt to be reasonable in your foreign policy actions toward helpless people. So my hope from the group that I was with is that every faith in that circle would be using their pulpits this Sunday and up until October, in fact, repeatedly voicing this concern. What are we doing to adjust this visible genocide that we're seeing on TV every day and call ourselves religious people? So I'll stop there because I know there's a lot of static in the background, but I've written a letter. In fact, I've written a journal article in our local newspaper entitled Vote No Excuses, and I've detailed some of the things that I'm concerned about in that regard, too. We cannot let this kind of thing, discourage us. It should encourage us to really, really get even more involved in the political process to make a difference in the quality of life that we experience in this country. And I'll stop there. Thank you very much.
Another twist, Sister Cheryl, we've talked about this privately. I don't think we need to go into it in detail, but I found it very interesting that 45, when he won one of the primaries that he won this past week, maybe it was when he was in South Carolina. Might have been that one, or right after that. he talked about, they just showed a brief clip where he talked about Governor, and he said, New Scum. You know, he always has to come up with a pejorative nickname for somebody, talking about Governor Newsom of California, who many have accused of running a shadow campaign. So apparently he's trying to head that off at number 45. So it'll be very interesting, I think, after we see what happens with Super Tuesday. Nikki Haley got a few votes there in Chocolate City in Washington, D.C. She won the primary there, which I think is indicative of the types of voters that she appeals to. And I haven't heard it. I didn't hear any comment from him this morning, 45, as far as the result of that. But also the earthquake hedge. She must have been good at dodgeball, because that girl can dodge and dodge. She can weave and dodge. A direct question. When she was asked if she would still support Trump if he became the
if he would endorse him.
Would she endorse him?
If she would.
And she dodged by saying, well, you know, they had to make that pledge before the debate, and the situation isn't the same now, but she didn't come right out and say that she would not endorse him. You know, she wasn't as definitive on that question as she was on the U.S. isn't a racist country. So,
right. I saw that. I saw that she...
It'll be interesting.
So, I saw that on Meet the Press. I think so. We're going to take a quick break, but I did want to ask, and let me say this to Brother Philemon, and then we're going to take a quick break. And Brother Philemon, you know, you can just hit mute on your phone real quick, and then you can always, I'm going to leave you off of mute, but you can hit mute on your phone. Take yourself off mute.
All right.
When you want to speak.
We'll go.
But I wanted, this is the question I want to ask you when we come back from break, and then the audience, you can weigh in too. As we head into Ramadan, there was a statement by Vice President Harris that, and so many are giving her credit for calling for a ceasefire, and, you know, and I've been a supporter of hers, and, you know, she's related to my husband, so I stand behind that, and I'm trying my best. However, what she said was that it was a pause for Ramadan, and that's where I'm having a little bit of problem. I don't understand what that means. A ceasefire pause for Ramadan. To me, it gave me the same vision as throwing supplies from the helicopter into the water. It's an effort without making an effort. So he's like, there's an old saying that says, there's an old Native American saying that says, you cannot have one foot in the water and one foot in the canoe. You will fall. You can't have it. You can't have a foot in the water and a foot in the canoe. And so that's what it seems like. It seems like we're trying to, by saying a pause for a ceasefire pause for Ramadan, you're still, let me see how I can support Israel without really supporting them. How can I make it seem like I'm supporting Palestinians without really supporting them? Can we, like, not kill the babies during Ramadan? You need to kill them afterwards. Just, like, not during Ramadan. Let's take a quick break for PSA, and then we'll come back, okay? I want to hear what you have to say, because that was my take on it. But sometimes my translation you know, my translation software might be a little off. Be right back. Don't touch that dial if you want to, weigh in on the conversation. And we're going to come back and talk about not just business, but we really want to talk about what's happening during this Get Out the Vote week, especially tomorrow, Super Tuesday, all across the country. More than a dozen states will be weighing in on this primary season, and not just at the top of the ticket, where many are voting either for the GOP or the Democratic candidate, or voting on committee, send a message. Many will be voting down ballot, up to and including your county and state officials. We will also be talking about electoral politics, your civic responsibility, and what that means to put faith into action as we head into our holy month. Be right back. Dial 515-605-9891 and push the number 1 on your phone to get into the queue. Thank you very much.
Assalamu alaikum, and thank you for supporting the CWSC AM360 annual Ramadan Telethon, which helps us financially secure our intelligentsia operations. And some of those operations are as follows: the American Muslim 360 Broadcasting Network, Speakers Bureau, Online National Resource Directory, Volunteer Human Resource Network, the Think Tank, College Scholarship Program, Team, Working Together, such as with the Learning Lab, Interfaith and Interfaith Collaborative, Internship and Leadership Development Program, Ambassador Program, and International Collaborative. Please visit us online to see more of the Intelligentsia and the annual report. For your mailing in your donation, you can send it to CWSC, Inc., Marina Village, 4905 34th Street South, number 185, St. Petersburg, Florida, 33711-4511. Make your check or money order payable to CWSC, Inc. Thank you. And stay tuned for more information on the Ramadan Telethon.
Assalamu alaikum. This is the Preacher Hadi, host of Al Islam and Focus Learning Lab, here on AM360, inviting you to join me Saturday evening at our new time, 5 o'clock to 7 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time, as we continue to share inspiring and thought-provoking Islamic education. Inshallah, I will see you in the lab at our new time, 5 to 7 o'clock p.m. Eastern, Saturday evening. Assalamu alaikum, and thank you kindly.
Assalamu alaikum. Welcome to AM360. Join your host, Munira Habil, every Tuesday from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time as we explore relationship topics addressing what we didn't know, what we've learned, and what we need to know and why. Because on this show, it's all about courtship and marriage.
Peace be with you and welcome to Positive Solutions to Critical Issues, hosted by yours truly, Dr. Jamal Rashid and instructor Henry Hasid. This program is sociologically as well as psychologically inclined, with Fitler as its base. We examine the root seed to multiple effects that impact our holistic daily lives. So tune in each and every Thursday morning from 7 to 8 Eastern Standard Time here on American Muslim 360. Thank you, and have a pleasant day.
Join us live every Wednesday morning from 7 a.m. 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time with host Naima Latif and yours truly, Imam Kareem Hamid. presented the Female Solution. We look forward to your presence. Assalamu alaikum.
All right. We're back. All right. So I'll ask a very focused question, and then I want to get into our topic for today. Super Tuesday. So, again, intent. I get the intent, same as the intent with the dropping of the supplies. The intent to ask for a focus, this so-called temporary or Ramadan pause, ceasefire. But as we have seen in the past, you know, we've had mosques and masjids blown up during Ramadan. We've had a lack of awareness or lack of care shown during our holy month. And quite frankly, the United States and other entities not care that it's our holy month and pretty much co-sign inhumane practices. And this staunch refusal to care about inhumanity with this, well, they started it. Sounds like, you know, I call it a kindergarten argument, right? Who is they? Right? Because I haven't seen a newborn, the ones we see who are starving, or a kindergartner, or small children, or any of these women. You know, we're equivocating Hamas with Palestinian or people from Gaza, of which some are Israeli or Jewish, I shall say. This wholesale killing of anyone within the realm of a certain geographic region being allowable in an effort to validate this boogeyman has gone well out of believability for me. Convince me otherwise.
Convince you otherwise of what?
My translator in my head might be off. Maybe it's miscalibrated or something. But I don't think. I think they said where I am right now. My calibrator says that I'm not. My eyes aren't lying to me.
I think it's. I mean it's. No offense to Stevie Wonder or Ray Charles, but I think they could see what's going on. Biden lost 100,000 votes in Michigan, which is a swing state. Michigan is one of the swing states that put him in office, really, because he was able to cast. People say there's five of them. Some say maybe six if you include Georgia. Okay, so that is, you know, that's not an exit poll. That is a bright yellow flashing light saying caution, caution. He is a politician who wants to get reelected. Okay? So he thought that, you know, his soft peddling would change people's opinion. People's opinion hasn't changed. And I was just looking at with Super Tuesday coming up, there's 16 states where you're going to have presidential candidates. And of those 16, Iowa has a possibility of uncommitted. Massachusetts has no preference. North Carolina, great state of North Carolina, where Brother Fleming hails from. They have no preference. Tennessee has uncommitted. Texas has uncommitted. Who else? So they're not swing states, those that I called off that have uncommitted. But that is going to let them see, okay, it's not just Muslims, it's not just Arabs. Who are against his policy with unbridled support of Israel. So how many more votes do you potentially have to lose? So he's on the chessboard. He's like, okay, what move do I have to make to let these people perhaps consider me? Okay, I'm going to send my vice president out there. She doesn't have any other role but to support what this administration is about. She's not going to say, no, I'm not going to go out there and say that, Mr. President. She's going to go out there and say what the speech writers have said she's going to say. They have politically avoided ceasefire. Total ceasefire, secession of Titans at the UN Security Council, voting 3 times against ceasefire resolutions. So she can't just blatantly end that ceasefire. She has to put that pause in the back of ceasefire because she knows that it would be a total, 180 or 360 shift from the public and international stance that the country has taken. So he hasn't gone all the way, but he's trying to see if he enters along, how far, how much can he give up? It's just like a negotiation table. How much can I give up to see what you will accept? If I have her come out there and say that, will that cool down this uncommitted, no preference movement? And it is a movement in the country right now during this primary season. When the primary season is over, people are going to have to think long and hard, okay, what do we do now if they don't have a permanent ceasefire in place? So she says ceasefire pause in Ramadan because the war cabinet guy has said if we don't have a deal by Ramadan, we're going into Rafah. And that, my friends, we've seen genocide now. That will be genocide to the max. They take more of their ground forces into Rafah, where you have over 1 million people packed in with nowhere to go, no outlet. What is going to happen? We're talking about mass genocide. And so he has the pressure from the Israelis in their unconscionable, shameless position, and he has the pressure, the internal pressure here in America. He thought he could ignore the international pressure, but he's finding that the pressure at home is just as strong, if not stronger, than the international pressure. So she has to say something. She has to give the appearance of we're really going to the max on this. But no, they're not going to the max. They're doing the minimum that they can do to get the negotiated result that they want. And that's a big part of our problem.
Well, yeah,
we're
and I think that,
No, go ahead.
Well, I think that, yeah. Let me see. Brother Fleming, you have something?
Yes, I just want to say you're not incorrect in your interpretation. You're absolutely on the money. You know, for a long time, I would call politicians used car salesmen. They tell you anything to get your vote, then they disappear after the vote is taken. So to me, it's like a pimp to put out there Ramadan to try to dissuade the community that indeed they're concerned with religious inclination, when in fact that's not the true picture. My hope and prayer is that indeed something will come out of that, and I'm looking forward to something happening this week because it's critical. If it doesn't happen this week, the odds are not even this temporary ceasefire will take place. So I'm going to keep my eye on the prize to make sure that we aren't deceived by this effort. I'm going to say a half of a dove instead of a full dove. And I can say a whole lot more, but I know there's a lot of noise in the background, so I'll hold and let my sisters take the lead, as they always do. Assalamu alaikum.
Well, it's my
turn. You know,
I would say that, can I just say this one little footnote, Cheryl? What I would say is that we as Muslims, as believers, let's get up, let's make tahajjud, let's ask Allah to bring peace in Gaza. And inshallah, let's just keep that prayer going until Ramadan starts. And inshallah, maybe we will have the two parts. If we don't, Allah is the best knower, but let's make that special effort. And there was a comedian. I usually don't like to joke about serious things like this, but this guy, I don't know, I think he was Palestinian. I just saw this one little clip. He was saying, you know, the Palestinians are the right people for this circumstance because they're tough. They're some tough people. He said, you don't give them food, you don't give them water. And this goes to your point, Cheryl, about using Ramadan. He said, have you people ever heard of Ramadan? Of course they're going to be able to survive this.
Exactly. We got Ramadan. So I think what I would like is one step further than just prayer. I think that I would like our appeal as Muslims. You know, there's billions of us in the world. I think that we demand, right? We have prayer, and we have that on our side. But I also think that we have the power of the demand of our voices to demand. I don't think enough of us have come together. I've said this before about having an agenda, and I think that, you know, I had the benefit last week of spending a week in the last 9-10 days on the road for business. I was in New York, and then I've been, you know, Monday through Friday in D.C. So I'm going to talk about that in a few minutes, about all the things I got to see at the Capitol. And then while a lot of this was coming down in real time. And then I left there, and before I came home late last night, early this morning, actually, about 1 o'clock this morning, I left and I went to Boston to spend a few days with my daughter since I was back east. And I took her ballot. I took her ballot so she could vote. And I can bring it back and turn it in on time tomorrow so she could sign it and whatever, you know, be voting for in the presidential election coming up. And so, you know, it's a big deal, big primary vote. And so we're going through I took her book, her election guide, and we're going through it. And she's talking through it and she's asking me about it. Her roommate, same thing. Now, roommate's not from here, from Colorado, actually. So, and she's the captain of the cheer squad at BU. But I was talking to a bunch of her friends, and we're talking about these things. And these are a bunch of young people. Even though she's in grad school, but she's undergraduate age. So it's a bunch of 20-year-olds. And I'm talking to these young people, and first thing out of their mouth is, what do you think we should do about the presidential election? And they are very against voting for Biden. This is exactly what they say. They said, I really don't want to vote for him right now. They said they want to write on committee. I say to them, I'm not here to tell you what to do, except I'm going to tell you what to do. You have to vote. How you vote is up to you, but you must vote. Not voting is not an option, but you must vote. If you would like to write in, so some of them said they were going to write, they, can I write in my own name, which we had a good laugh. And then so we settled on, they said, well, okay, we don't want the other guy. So what if we vote for him in November because they're the only choice we have. But what if we write in on committee? Now, I want to tell you, this is a lot of college students, a lot. So that was Michigan where you saw the 100,000. And I want everybody to listen to how this is happening across the country. That was Michigan. Super Tuesday might bring about more than what people are expecting. Because I'm just seeing this from there, and I'm seeing it from my son's friends, both of my son's friends, because I always help them fill out their ballots as well. I always have these ballot meetings on Zoom. I think that people are in for a very surprise, right? So while each of these candidates might get their top percent that they need to move on to the general election, the fact that Nikki Haley got 40-something percent in each one, between 30 and 40 percent in each one of these, right? And the fact that even uncommitted is getting 14 percent speaks volumes. And these young people saying they're willing to write uncommitted. I'm just going to tell you, there's 5 votes coming out of my house. And all of them say uncommitted. And this is, even though it's just the primaries, and they'll probably all say the same thing in November. I'm not in charge of telling people how to vote. I'm just in charge of making sure everybody votes in my house. Speaks volume. Body, the entire Muslim world, and wherever you vote, and whatever you do, it is not up to... So President Biden cannot tell, or whoever the president of the United States, let's say it this way, the United States president cannot control Netanyahu. But you can send a strong message, because that person will do what they will do. But you can send a strong message with stop supporting them, right? Pakistan just elected a new prime minister, and it is not who the people want, because the people elected a very strong people's choice for the cabinet. So that prime minister is going to be capped at what they can do, because the cabinet is going to do what the people ask them to do. It is up to the people in this country to stop thinking that one individual is going to be able to do something. We don't have a system where we have a king or a dominant figure like that in this country. So we need to be able to look at it in that way, that we have this kind of power that we are letting go. So we need to be talking about change from a different perspective. And we have a lot of power as Muslims in this country, if only we will use it. And as we go into Ramadan, this is what I want to talk about these next hours. How do we use that power? How do we collectively make sure that we are really becoming change makers in our community, not just when elections roll around and not just at the top of the ticket, but how do we influence it in such a way that is not this conversation that if we just vote a little bit harder, maybe they can throw us some crumbs over the counter and we'll get some little treat. They'll treat us to a few more wages. We'll get $15 an hour instead of $10 an hour. They'll stop taking away women's rights to have domain over their own bodies. They'll let a few of us out of prison or not arrest us at all. They'll stop beating us on the sidewalk because your skin is brown or a little browner than the next person. they won't put you back in handcuffs because you have brown skin and you happen to be 6 feet tall as a brown man. Because I call it crap that it is. Because at this point, voting for someone to keep someone else out of office or to keep someone from taking our rights away is a misplaced goal. We have to decide what is important to us as a community, and I don't just mean a community in the form, or it's really a community of believers, but it's a community of humanity, people who are here to uplift humanity. I was listening to the show, Brother Fleming, you were on as well, on Friday Roundtable, here on Blog Talk, on M360, and it was a show about interfaith leadership.
Yeah.
And in that show, it was more about what do we do to uplift humanity. Is not whether it's all Christian or Muslim or all Buddhist or anything else. It's more so what do we do to keep turning us into this nation where someone believes they're more superior to another because whether it's creed or color or the religion or basically the ism, xenophobia, sexism, racism, nationalism. But the bottom line is we can stop lying to each other and ourselves about what a party can or will do for us. Because when we enter that voting booth with the candidates that we have a choice of, you can put Mickey Mouse on there, but Mickey Mouse is not going to win. Only one or two of those candidates is going to win. You can put uncommitted on there. Uncommitted is not going to win. It's going to be one or two of those candidates. Not the candidates we wish we had. It's the candidates that we have. We have to appreciate the system and work in that system to evolve it. And that involves all of us trying to do what can we do to incrementally make change. So whether you're breathing air that you don't like, or you want to change that, or water that we don't, they be poisoning us. I don't want us to be on this air being disingenuous or pretending that we otherwise have different choices. There's a theory that when I was growing up, my mother would not let us believe in it. My grandmother would not let us believe in it. You guys have seen Peter Pan, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Sister,
yes.
You've seen Peter Pan? Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
The Tinkerbell logic, right? Tinkerbell. If I believe with all my heart, something will come true, or else things will disappear. It doesn't work that way. It doesn't work that way. And not voting, particularly on certain issues, especially local and state issues, just isn't an option.
Yes.
It's just not an option.
Seconds.
And this is, yes, sir, but just let me finish the sentence.
Yes.
This is what I tell my
yes,
children.
Please.
This is what I tell myself. This is what I tell people who I work with. It's just not an option. And if we are to change this system, we are to be the ones to change it. Go ahead, sir.
Yes. Thank you very much. And I agree wholeheartedly with you. I want to suggest that we always have a three-pronged strategy. A strategy for all three branches of government, that is executive, judicial, and legislative, because all three impact our lives to a great degree. So we can't just be single-focused on just one branch of government. Beyond that, you know, we need to be reminded every now and then that there's a hadith that says, if you see a wrong, change it with your hands. If you can't change it with your hands, change it with writing. Speak out against it. The third one, pray for to change it in your heart, and that is the weakest of faith, really. So we have to take action, put our faith into action, and do something to change the circumstances we're in right now. And be strategic about it. Think through. In fact, we were advised to think five times how is this going to really benefit the greater society, the activity that I take place in today? Think it through, and let's come up with the best method to really move our humanity forward. And we are the barometers for that if we're sincere about our belief system. We should never accept anything less than equality on an equal basis for all humanity, period, across the board. Now, I know this change will make a lot of noise because it comes as another halt, but I want at least put in my 10 seconds. Thank you very much. I vote the whole ballot.
Thank you.
The whole ballot. Planning ballot.
The whole ballot.
Vote the whole ballot. Please, brothers and sisters. Vote, no excuses.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Sister?
Okay, I just want to remind people that all 435 seats of the U.S. House of Representatives will be up for election. Forty-three of the House incumbents are not running for re-election in 2024, so people need to check their district to see who is on the, or who will be on the ballot or on the primary if your incumbent has someone that is running against them. You need to know that. You need to know the policy stances and the, if the person has any kind of political history that you can track. If you're not satisfied with your incumbent, you need to think of why, and will the people running person or people running against them are more in aligned with your interests. So there's a lot for us to consider. We know that right now the Republicans hold the majority in the House of Representatives, 219 to 213. And so this is a big reason, this is a big factor in why we're seeing this deja vu effect again with the funding of the government, with these continuing resolutions, and looking at Friday as another deadline, and then the 22nd, they moved the first deadline to the 22nd, I think, and then the 8th deadline is there. And so Mike Johnson is just really being ineffective, and it appears, I don't know, I'm going to go out on a limb and say this, it appears that a lot of people might be sleeping on the fact that if April 30th runs around or comes around and we don't have a budget, there's an automatic 1% cut in the budget, okay? So less SNAP benefits, less benefits, those safety net programs will be among those programs that get that 1% cut. So we can't let the Republicans continue to not get a budget in place. That's just one thought. And one reason why we're in this predicament is because they have this very slim majority in the House, and they are being controlled by a small number of people within the Republican Party, maybe 6 to 8 extremists who are holding the rest. We want to talk about a hostage, holding the rest of the elected officials in our government, in the House of Representatives, hostage with their extreme ideas and support of Donald Trump, who is not the president, who is not an elected official, but who is a 91-count indicted felon. So that's where we are right now. So I would encourage people to look at the primary material that you received, either for Super Tuesday or if your primary is not happening tomorrow, if it's another date in the future, look through the material, see who is running, and see what they stand for, and see if what they stand for is in alignment with your interests. As far as, I just want to comment, Sister Cheryl, on action. We as Muslims with actions. Allah tells us in the Quran that the remembrance of Allah is the greatest force. So I don't disagree that we as believers, we have to take action, but we cannot at the same time downplay the power of praying to Allah and asking Allah for what we feel that we need. And Allah tells us in the Quran that the one that spends the night begging and asking, that Allah hears our prayers. So if we get up for tahajjud and we make that prayer, I bear witness. I know I have done it, and I know it has worked, and it's not spooky. It is what Allah has promised us, and we have to apply the it's just like all of the pundits and even us on this program. We may have ideas and we put them out there and whatever. We don't know what's going to happen. We don't know what Allah is going to allow to happen or what Allah is going to stop. So, yes, we have to be civically engaged and we have to do the best. And also the Prophet was of the habit of telling his followers to make istikhara, the prayer for guidance, in everything that they did. Our voting is a very important aspect of our life as we conduct civic responsibility. So I would say one important action we need to do before we cast our vote, so we need to pray to Allah to bless us to make informed decisions, to make the best decision that will be pleasing to Allah, first of all. So I just had to say that because
I agree with you. I don't think I disagree with you.
Okay.
I think my outlook is I would like to see us do something that, you know, we especially during, I think one of the beautiful things about Islam is that we know that at least 5 times a day we are praying in unison, right? And there's nothing more beautiful about that. And if we can use the power of that prayer to pray for peace and to pray for not just a ceasefire, but to pray for the people of Palestine and Yemen and Sudan and Gaza and just the rightful humanity, right?
Yes.
That is what I'm looking for. I'm not just looking for, oh, pray for people to be put into office. Nah. I think that if we can collectively do that, that is the power that I want us to recognize that we have. We have something that others just do not have. Billions of people who pray at the same time every day, no matter what zone you're in, praying for something like that is the power that no one else has, sister. This is what I'm talking about, and that has the ability to move, to change the world in a way that nothing else has. And if we can all just agree to do that, and that is where my heart is that I don't know what it takes to get there, right? I don't know what it takes to get there.
I think that what we, okay, I'll just, this is my personal opinion. One thing that I find frustrating as someone in the association with Imam Khoury to be Muhammad, and anyone in listening, if I'm mistaken, you know, raise your hand and correct me and everything. Aside from ACGG, I don't know of another political arm that we have in our association that is consistent, that's looking at policy, that is working towards educating us as members of this association and encouraging us as members in the Association of the Leadership of Emmanuel Anthony Dean Muhammad to be civically and politically engaged. People on the East Coast and the Jersey area, they seem to have gotten the message. I don't see that here in the West Coast. Maybe I'm wrong. I know there was a brother who was active down in the L.A. area, Brother Najee Ali. I don't know if he's still active. I'm encouraged by Brother Omar Hakeem Day and what he's doing and his project 2192. But I would like to see, and I think that we need more leaders in the community, and I'm not talking about imams per se. I'm talking about just common everyday Abdul and Fatima who are involved in political activism. I would like to see more of that kind of movement in our association, and I think that is what's going to help us move towards the type of policy development and strategy development. Maybe I just don't know, and maybe folks are out there on the ground doing that. If they are, I certainly hope that they would come forward. I hope that they would come and be guests on our program so we can get the word out to the members of our community that this is going on. And this is the kind of education I think that we need. We need, and we've said this before, you said it, Sister Cheryl, you've been very instrumental in encouraging young people to enter the political arena. It has to come, I think, through conversations in the home and in the masjid and in social settings that we encourage young people to find out what opportunities exist. And they've had excellent examples. The young brother Michael, I never can remember his last name, who was the mayor of Stockton, young man, I think 25 and then 29, the mayor of a city that had some significant problems. You know, we had a young man in Oakland who tried to run for the Oakland mayor's position. He didn't win, but at least he tried. And in fact, my children knew him. They grew up with him. So those kinds of efforts, I would like to see more of that from our community. We did have in the Baltimore area, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention him, Brother Safia Ross. He ran when Elijah Cummings passed away. He ran in that particular office. I'd like to see young men like him. And yourself, Sister Cheryl, you ran for the seat that Garamondi actually got. There, I want to think that we got to get the education of folks to know, first of all, how is this thing structured? Because you're not getting civics in school. And most times, if you don't come up with in a politically active family, you're not getting the encouragement. So we need some kind of way to get the education out there to our members in our association and the general, our neighbors. How does this work? You know, some material that came to our house. Does a county supervisor impact the crime rate? Was the question, I think, on this particular candidate thing. His election material. So what do people really know? What does the county supervisor do, except for the only time you hear about them is when it's election time? But what are they really doing? And if you call up to a political candidate's office, do their staff just try to block you, or do they try to help you? You know, all of these things, I think, we have to look at, and we got to get people excited about and moving towards making the kind of change that we all are talking about from our different perspectives. So I don't want to ramble anymore, but the fact that we have these 435 positions in the House of Representatives and that we need to get, you know, people in there who are actually going to govern and not just block and not just, you know, act like a bunch of kids, you know, that don't have good sense, but they just want to be against everything. I would recommend that people go to Ballotpedia, ballotpedia.org to get an idea of what's going on throughout the country, the positions that are open up, and find your state, find your congressional district, find your senatorial district, and well, you know, you only have two senators in each state. Like in California, we have the choice between Adam Schiff, Katie Porter, Barbara Lee. Okay, so those are three people that we have records because they're all in the House of Representatives. Now they want to go and be a Senate. So look at their history, look at their record, see where they're getting their money from. I would say make sure you know where their stance is on the current foreign policy of America, the whole Israel-Gaza situation, and choose from there who is the candidate that best represents your interests. But we got to get out tomorrow, Super Tuesday, and any other day that your primary is being held. And find resources that can help you to zero in on the candidate and what they stand for. And most importantly, who is giving them money? Because wherever the money is coming from, that's a big indication of what they stand for and who they will be obligated to once they get in, if they get elected. Who is going to be pulling their strings? And we know that in the House, the people who have stood up for ceasefire, like Cori Bush, Jamal Bowman, Ilhan Omar, Rashida Tlaib, Andre Carson, I'm blanking on them right now. We know that
Ayanna Pressley.
You know, AIPAC and JBL, they are running candidates against them, spending cool bucks, as we used to say. I mean, I think AIPAC pledged $100 million that they were going to put in the race just to stop Rashida Tlaib and Ilhan and all of those six that we talked about. And the candidate that was running against Jamal Bowman, he had the shameless attitude to say that Bowman was getting money from Hamas. No evidence, no nothing to back it, but just throwing, you know, it's like you get a hand grenade and you throw it into a crowd, you know, and people just scatter without finding out, well, wait a minute. What is your proof? And he could not give any proof for what he said. But this is the kind of tactics that they use, and we have to be mature enough to do our research and not, you know, fall for these kind of dirty politic tactics that are being used. That's it. And go to openpeoples.org to track the money. That's all I have to say right now.
Yeah, and it's interesting because all of you will at some point have to look at these. The one that's always curious for a lot of people is judges, right? Some of you may or may not have judges on your ballot, right? And that's
probably the race that has the least amount of information that's available, especially local judges. And it's always a question about, okay, so why does, especially in California and many states, why do we elect judges, right? Because when you're voting for, like, a state legislator or an officer of your state, like a governor or a state senator or state assembly member, you can look at their voting record or what they so-called promise to do, their policy positions. They have a campaign website. It's a little tricky with judges, right? Because judges can't promise based on they're nonpartisan, so they have to be very careful about what they can promise to do. And for most states, including California, there's this methodology of how they choose judges. And why I'm pivoting to judges is really important, because this is what usually affects a lot of our communities, and we don't even know it. Is that hidden effect, because we're so focused, Brother Fleming brought up earlier, about the three-tier level, the legislative, judicial, and executive branch of governance. We all get so focused on the executive branch, president, vice president, etc., and the Congress. We forget about, okay, I'm choosing this, because they throw it in your face all the time. Oh, you got to worry about the president and vice president. And then we be, oh, the legislative branch, oh, my Congress, I got to choose my congressperson. I got to choose my senator. Think about the judicial. And the judicial is where it's fought out. It's where a lot of your rights can either be confirmed, affirmed, or taken away. When people were running around the country upstate a couple of years ago with women's rights to domain over their own bodies, believing whatever you want to. I don't call it abortion rights. I believe it's domain over your own body. Call it whatever else you want to, but that's what it is. And now recently, it is this fight over in vitro fertilization. And coupled with voting rights, the three strikes law. Previously, it was cocaine over powder cocaine over crack cocaine. It was the game tag over misdemeanors. It was what part of the county do you live in, whether or not an officer can cite you for a violation versus taking, especially if it's a young person, versus taking them to juvenile. And a lot of that depends on not just the officer, but the judge. And the method of choosing judges really depends on the court level. So let's start with lower level court. So we have lower level courts that are like our trial courts. Those are like the superior courts that a lot of people are more familiar with, right? Those are the ones that most residents and citizens, I try not to use that word a lot, but most residents, those are the ones we are most likely to interact with. In most counties and cities, the voters are the ones who ultimately or directly decide who gets to take the bench. And those are the judges who, in most states, including California, they serve like 6-year terms, whether, and they rule in like criminal and civil cases. And those issues can be traffic violations, stalking, divorces. Most of them are statutory. They go a little above statutory. Most of them are misdemeanor, lower criminal cases. There's some
really special circumstances that apply when we vote for Superior Court judges, right? They happen in even number years, such as this year. If the candidate gets like 50% or more of the vote in the primary, which is now, they don't have to go to November. They're considered the winner. There's no runoff. So they have to be more than 50%, which really doesn't mean 51%. It really means 50% plus one vote. A lot of people don't know that. If the judge is an incumbent judge and they have no opposition, their name won't even be on the ballot. If they're running on a post, they automatically are declared the judge. If there is a vacancy, the governor appoints a judge. And that's usually how judges first get on the bench, right? Is that the governor appoints them. He has a panel of attorneys who've been admitted to practice law, and they have like 10 years of experience or whatever. And could have served as a judge, a lower court judge in California or somewhere else for like 10 years before the election or the appointment. And the governor will appoint him. And in California, it's called the State Bar's Commission on Judicial Nominees. There's an evaluation process. They go through this whole background investigation. They look at their qualifications. And then the governor will appoint them, and then they have to be there's a confirmation process. But there's also that if it's an odd year or before an election, then they get put on the ballot to be affirmed by the electorate. And then you go through that whole process. If they win 50% plus one of the vote in the primary, then they're the winner. If not, they go up to runoff in November, or they can finish out the six-year term. It's a really complicated process. California has been doing it for many years. The benefit of that is that if you don't like them, they can be recalled. They can be recalled by the voters. But even though that it's nonpartisan, you know, we all know that judges are not entirely not without political influence, right? They can get campaign contributions, including from attorneys. They come into their court. They can get campaign contributions from, you know, police associations, defense trial lawyers, prosecutors. It's hard because there's a PC group who don't think that this makes, you know, fair representation or fair elections. But the judges are supposed to be like above the fray of politics and really unbiased in their decision making. Taking money from special interest groups or from other defense counsels or prosecutors or prosecutorial organizations or from sheriff's organizations or it can make it not seem as if they're totally impartial, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm telling you guys all of this because I want you to think about what is it that you should be looking for anyway in a judge. So I wanted to give that kind of background. That's a period court, but then I want to come back and tell you what should you be looking for in a this is a period court. Now what should you be looking for in the other kind of judge that we look for is a Supreme Court, right? So you got the Superior Court is just like 6 years. So if one of the Supreme Court or the Court of Appeal justices steps down, because they get 12-year terms, if they step down before the end of their 12-year term or they retire or whatever, the governor nominates someone to replace them. And again, those nominees have to been an attorney who's been practicing law in California or who's served as a judge in California. This is in California. That rule is very similar in other states, but it's pretty much the same. Somebody's retired, somebody's died, somebody's otherwise departed, and the governor appoints them to the Supreme Court, the state Supreme Court, or state court of appeal. The positions last 12 years, and this is the highest court in your state. Again, they must have served as a judge. It's very hard to get removed from the bench. So these are pretty much lifetime positions. To get removed from the bench, you must have violated a standard of ethical conduct or shown that you have no longer the mental capacity to serve. Or the voters can take you out. But most of the time, it's you've violated the code of judicial conduct, which is where they get their standards for ethical conduct. That Supreme Court is where you see, like, a president pull someone for the United States District Court, or the, like, we have Region 9 or Region 1 or even the Supreme Court nominees usually come from these courts. Now, what are we looking for in the court? Any questions, first of all, before I keep going? After each term, okay, go ahead. Sorry.
No, I said I don't have a question. I don't see any hand raised.
Okay, good. So the biggest thing is that even though the governor nominates after this first term, they have to go on the ballot. Because, with the judge, they go on the ballot after the term. With an appointed justice, if they're filling a term, then the next gubernatorial election, the next time the governor's up, they have to go on the ballot. So if you say that the governor's not up for 3 years, that means you fill out the 3 years. If you get appointed in the governor's third year and only has 1 year left, like right now the governor has 2 years, and they get appointed in 2024, then they have to go on the ballot in 2026 to get retained in that judicial spot as a justice. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Whereas a judge, because it's 12 years, right? But as a judge, if it's a six-year term and they get appointed in 2024, they don't have to go into the ballot until 2028 because they're going to serve out the full term, the six-year term. If it was 6 years, if they're only serving out, if it's 4 years left, if it's only 2 years left on the term, then they would go 26. So whatever the term was left, they're serving out the rest of the term. So that's why it's a little bit tricky, whatever the term is left. What are we looking for in a judge? This is a question that most people have the biggest problem because it's hard to find information about a judge. So when I'm listening to judges, when they come to forums, right, to candidate forums, which more and more of them are starting to do. Before, you just couldn't find a good candidate for him with judges. The first thing you want to do is you want to find out how they watch their body language, see how they're answering questions. Do they seem patient? Do they answer questions with a sense of fairness and impartiality? Do they impart a bit of dignity to the people that come before them, some honesty in decision-making? And how do you know whether they're imparting fair and impartiality? One way is if you ask a question like that you know is partial, such as, how would you on a particular issue? Like, how would you vote on the issue of whether a juvenile should go to adult prison? How's that? That seems pretty partial, right, sister?
If a juvenile should go to an adult prison.
Yes.
Asking a judge that question.
A judge candidate, that question, right?
A judge candidate.
How do you feel about, how do you feel about a juvenile convicted of a felony being sentenced to an adult prison? How about that? I'm trying to think of a question that requires like a partial answer, right? Would you sentence a juvenile convicted of a felony to an adult prison? And this actually happened to one of the DA candidates.
One of the sub-states, didn't it happen? I think some of the sub-states are notorious.
Yeah, they're notorious for answering these questions. So how you figure someone who focuses on fairness and impartiality, and this is really for the audience, is someone who knows about impartiality and fairness and honesty in decision-making should probably answer these questions similar to the following. I would have to take into account the factors of the case and the case law and follow the rules of the law. They should not answer that question yes or no. The reason why is because they don't know the factors of the case. They don't know if that juvenile is 12 or if that juvenile is 23. In some states, juvenile is 26 and under. In some instances, a juvenile who is 21 might have the mental capacity of a 12-year-old. So they shouldn't be trying to make a decision from there, from that type of question, without knowing all the factors of the case. So someone who is practicing fairness and impartiality should not be trying to litigate a case without all of the facts. Too often, when you listen to judge candidates or any candidate, a district attorney candidate, a judge candidate, a prosecutorial candidate, anybody like that, and sometimes it's not called a district attorney, called something else, they're so quick to want to please the people who are asking questions. They're going to give you what they think you want to hear rather than showing you the characteristics you want in the person who is going to be ultimately deciding the fate of a lot of individuals of our community. So look for characteristics rather than listening to the answer. What kind of characteristics are they showing? Are they showing you the qualities that they will ultimately exhibit when they're in the judicial proceedings? And judicial proceedings is true whether they're the judge, the prosecutor, or does that make sense?
Say that one more time.
What I like to say is that what you want to do is you want to look at what kind of characteristics are they going to show when they're in judicial proceeding, right? Whether they're the judge, or the prosecutor, right? Meaning the district attorney or the state's attorney. Sometimes it's called the state's attorney, or even the public defender. Because sometimes the public defender is too eager to make a deal, right? And these are the people who can bring harm, or they can bring true justice to people in our community. Other characteristics that you may look for, and you can see this in the dealings of their office, is: are they courteous? Are they conscientious? Fearless of public, they call it clamor, or what the public noise that's going on in the background? Do they care about public praise, or are they indifferent to like this political or private or partisan influences? Meaning that a judge should be administering justice according to the law, and knowing that their office is an office of public trust. So not using the office as a yielding political influence.
Okay, can I
not to make
you
a statement of a political influence? Yes.
Okay, so this presupposes that if the person, okay, I'm the voter, I have this judicial candidate, where am I going to see these characteristics? Do I have to look at court TV or do I have to go down to the courthouse? How does the voter get to evaluate these characters that you're talking about? Any suggestions on how our voters could do that?
Has a bar association, and it has within that bar association, there's also a court association for judges, separate judicial association that judges belong to. And you can go in and you can see for every judge, you can see how they voted on issues. You can see their cases. You can see their when they came into office. You can see all the cases that they've held. You can see all their legal proceedings and how they apply. And you can actually see how they wrote up you can see how they clerked, how they chose their clerks. You can see everything about that judge, right? From the time they came out of law school, and then when they before they came on the ballot, a lot of these judges had to have been interviewed by the governor of your state before they were appointed. So a lot of that is public, is made public, and you can also fill out a public records request for it, and they'll provide you with those interview notes. And then if you want to see them in person, what I'm going to tell you is most people don't know that they do candidate forums just like they do for every other candidate. Try and attend a candidate forum and listen to them. Watch them. Listen to them just like you do if it was for a state senator or your city council member or your school board. These judges are just as important as any of those other positions. And sometimes we get so caught up worried about, the congressman or the assembly member or the presidential race. We forget that these judges have a lot of influence on our daily lives as well. Does that answer your question?
Yes. As we see from the Supreme Court Nick's recent
and they pick them. Yeah. And they pick them. Your circuit court judge, your trial judge, your district judge, they all move up through the system. So they start in the circuit courts, and then they move to the district court, and then they move to, or the trial court, and then they move up to your state Supreme Court, and then they pick them to go, to Washington or your state. They pick them and they're very strategic. So I would just pay attention to that and just know that if you miss a forum, I can tell you some of the ones who put some of the best forums on, look at League of Women Voters. Look at some of your environmental associations in your state. Look at and I'm saying this, so don't say this is partiality or don't say this is I'm a member of them because I am not, but your DSAs, your Democratic Socialist Associations, and on the flip side, your Young Democrats or your Young Republicans, they put on a lot of these events where they're looking at, a lot of the universities are really good at putting these on so that the students can see both sides. So Young Democrats, Young Republicans, DSA, but especially your League of Women Voters. I do belong to that. But the League of Women Voters is nonpartisan, nonpartial, and they put them on, and they will record it and put it on their website, a link. If you don't have a recording, they do give the judges as well as any candidate on their Vote 411 website the ability to answer a questionnaire and put their positions on the website, so you will get that.
that link and you can go through their questionnaire for any candidate at any level, from school board to mosquito board to cemetery board, any candidate for any position whatsoever in your location. So I would highly recommend you do your homework and look that up. And if you ever have any questions, you can also contact us, and we'll be happy to try and help you find what information you need. But judges are important, and as Brother Fleming said earlier, vote up and down the ballot. Please don't skip any of them. And I'd rather you put in something on that line than skip any of it. But if the one exception that I will say is on a ballot measure, we have a few minutes left. Ballot measures can sometimes be confusing. So my advice to you on ballot measures is this, as we head into Super Tuesday. Before you vote yes on a ballot measure or no on a ballot measure, read it carefully. Sometimes it's worded so that when you vote yes, you're really voting no. When you vote no, you're really voting yes. Mm-hmm. So when you read it and it says something like, should the state do X, make sure you're reading it correctly. Because if it's saying something like, should we take this action, it's really asking you to say yes, which means they're going to do something in the affirmative. If you are unsure that that's the action you want to take, for instance, I'm going to give you like rent control. Should the state require landlords to cap expenses at XYZ? If you believe that the rent is just too daggone high and you don't want it to go any higher, then your answer should be yes. If you believe that in government overreach or whatever the other answer is, then your answer should be no. If you are unsure for any reason whatsoever, whatever your reason is, it's your own, vote no, whatever the issue is, because you want clarity in whatever your vote is. Sometimes the question comes this way. Should the state charge residents a 0.5% tax in perpetuity to fund additional school fees for students, and this is something that's going to be on the ballot in November, and raises for teachers for the next 30 years? That's a yes or no answer. If you answer yes, then the state will charge an additional 0.5 cent tax, and it does not have a sunset date. If you vote no, then the state will not do that. Those are the things you have to read the entire statement. So that is why you have to read it to see if you really want to vote yes or no. And sometimes they write it that way to trick people. So just make sure you're reading the entire measure.
And so we need to explain to the audience what we mean when we say sunset language.
Yeah. So sunset language means this. If we say should the state fund this in perpetuity, that means forever, until the voters retract it, until the voters say no more. Sunset language means, sunset means there's an end date. So generally, if there's a ballot measure, it will say for 30 years, for 20 years, until 2050, until 2040, until 2035. If it does not have an end date, that means there is no sunset. It will not end. It will go on to perpetuity until the voters say no, no more, no more money. So you have to be careful voting for ballot measures that does not have an end date, because that means they will continue to tax you
where they will continue to take money, or they will continue a bond measure until the voters retract it or take it back. So with, even if you like the bond measure, but it does not have an end date, my advice is always no. You do not want to vote for something that does not have a distinct beginning and end. You do not, you never want to give the government the power to have something forever. Give them an end date. You get 10 years, you get 5 years, you get 20 years, but these are all you get. You don't get 30, 40 years of having a bond, because there's a lot of money and there's a lot of time, and we don't know what's going to happen in 5, 10, 15, 20 years.
Okay.
Okay, we got 4 minutes left, a little under 4 minutes left. Looks like Brother Fleming has something to say before we go. Yes,
thank
sir.
Thank you very much, Mr. Sherrill. Yeah, I just wanted to say that one trick that's used quite often, you know, as a former county commissioner, is this 1/4 cent sales tax. It sounds like nothing almost. Now, this is just another example of what you've been talking about. The resolution might read, you know, do you agree to allow 1/4 cent increase in taxes? And they've advocated this as a way to perhaps pay teachers or to do something related to education. But if you don't read that very, very carefully, that 1/4 cent generates a lot of money. In fact, you should ask sometimes, what does 1 cent increase in your sales tax generate in terms of additional money for that entity, whether it be the county commissions or the city, et cetera? But don't let the 1/4 cent fool you. That is a lot of money. So I would follow the suggestion of our sister. If you don't have an end date, believe me, that will stay on the books until the voters change. And it's hard to get people to support that kind of effort. Most of the time they fail. They do it again, and they'll do it again. If you have poor counties that don't have a lot of tax base, they're very reluctant to add any kind of additional taxes to their ongoing property taxes. So just be informed. You know, take the time to read the literature. If you don't read it, don't have the time for it, talk to someone you trust, like Sister Cheryl, Sister Amatullah, who's gifted in this area, and they can inform you. So I want to just thank you for that brilliant explanation and just encourage everyone listening, do your research. Do your research. Do your research. Stay informed and stay engaged. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. Thank you for that, sir. Yes, I mean, all that can happen is that they go back and they rewrite it and they come up with something else. Doesn't mean that it won't, that service won't get done. It just means they'll do it in a more responsible way. But don't fall for it, and don't let them guilt trip you into doing it right this moment. because right this moment, they get us into having to have 40 years worth of expenses that we don't need. So Brother Fleming and I both have done this from an elected standpoint. Don't need it. All right, let's wrap these up, and we want to get everybody out to vote. Last word, sister. What you got?
Just everyone, those who have Super Tuesday, could you read through your materials and get to the back to the polling place or to the, if you have a drop box that you can access, make sure you do it early in the day if possible. And inshallah, if your state is not participating in Super Tuesday and you have primary at another day, keep up, keep informed, and more importantly, get out to vote. That's it.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Get his vote. Stay powerful. Stay purposeful. Stay prayerful, most importantly. Stay politically engaged. Participate civically. And get ready for Ramadan. As we change ourselves, our nature, our attitudes, our contributions to the world around us, will in turn also change. Let's get after it. Peace be gone. Assalamu alaikum. Thank you for joining us today. We are looking forward to not just getting out these votes, but Ramadan is coming.
Ramadan is coming.
Everyone.
Yes,
okay. That's a wrap.